It's 5 o'clock, so let's start with our session. Welcome to everyone. We have a big room, and we now hardly see you, but okay, that will change afterwards for the discussions. So welcome to the session number 2, Quality Management and Model Implementation. It's already the second session on that topic because we had so many interesting abstracts that we had to organize several sessions on the same topic. My name is Claudia Juncker. I will chair the session. I'm the head of Unit Quality and Government Finance Statistics in Eurostat. I think that overall heading the topic is very interesting and very relevant. And we have so many contributions because there are so many new developments in developing quality frameworks with different elements, which are also presented today in this session, some more fundamental, some more on elements like the risks and also the models. Before we start, I ask everybody kindly either to put your mobile phone on silence or to switch it off so we are not disturbed by that. For this session, we will have 6 speakers for 5 presentations. Hans Vigo from Norway, Michael College from Australia, Anna Bruno from Brazil, Silvia Losco from Italy, and then the last one will be a common presentation by Nilgün Dorsan from Turkey and Marina Signor from Italy. All questions and comments will be kept for after. We have finalized all the presentations, and we may also have questions by Twitter if it works. Let's see. And with that, I start the session. So our first speaker is Hans Vigo Sebo from Norway. He works in Statistics Norway in very different functions, methodologist, manager, director, quality manager. And he is probably one of the very few that has attended 8 quality conferences in total and also had contributions and papers in these 8 conferences. And today his paper is on Beyond the Code of Practice, New Quality Challenges in Official Statistics. So the floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you, Claudia. And good afternoon, all of you. The idea behind my paper is to discuss some quality challenges beyond code of practice. Challenges linked to compliance with this framework in practice. We are already in this room. 1 hour ago, there was some of the same kind of discussions, but I will maybe refer to something that was said there also. The paper consists of the following chapters. First, something about the background, which is, of course, the new developments and challenges linked to new data sources, etc., and quality frameworks. As considered already in the keynote speech this morning, there are trade-offs between various quality principles in the code of practice. The trade-offs that most readily come to mind are those between accuracy and timeliness. Another trade-off is between punctuality and timeliness. It's easy to have good punctuality if you don't have high ambitions on timeliness, for example. However, there might be trade-offs, even involving institutional quality principles, which are often laid down in statistical legislation, notably between professional independence and relevance, but also between confidentiality and relevance, and cooperation might also be a challenge for confidentiality. And balancing these principles and at the same time make statistics fit for purpose is discussed in the paper, and there are some examples that are referred to. The main balances considered are those I mentioned and could be just illustrated like this. Confidentiality and independence on the one side, cost effectiveness, relevance, and even cooperation on the other side. But first of all, what is meant by professional independence? Well, it's about how statistics are produced. It's about the methodology and when it's published. What? It's not about what to the same extent. What has to be decided by the user needs. But of course, there are some gray zones here. And the challenges linked to independence relevance are normally linked to funding. Yeah. Because we all experience reduced government budgets, more demand for more statistics, or also more EU-regulated statistics. And the answer is often more work on commission. In some cases, statistical institutions also have data management tasks on behalf of another authority with administrative purposes. At least this is the case in Norway. The users often request analysis, and such work on commission, thus ensuring good user contacts and relevance, may represent a challenge for the independence. Because paying customers, they set often the agenda. They have priority in practice, not in theory, but in practice. And some want to influence not only what statistics should be produced about, but also the scope of this, or the methodology, and even the results. But normally we not accepted the last thing, at least. That a large proportion of national statistics for EU members or members of the European statistical system is produced according to regulations describing not only the product but also the methodology is also an example of a possible trade-off. In this case, between professional independence, in fact, and comparability. But none of these factors or balance points are wrong or negative. But we should be aware of them and reflect on their trade-offs. The paper contains examples from several countries on conflicts on these trade-offs between the authorities and the NSIs or their director generals. All of these are, of course, not comparable. It's important for me to say that. But there are some common features in some of them. And in the paper, there are referred to examples from Greece, Argentina, and Canada, and in particular from Norway, where our director general was pressed to withdraw last autumn. For the details here, I have to refer to the paper, but this case had several aspects, and it was not easy to distinguish right or wrong. I like the expression in the session here earlier today. It was a time of rain. And it was also non-standard politicians and maybe a non-standard director general as well. There was a conflict then between the ministry, which is the owner department, the Ministry of Finance and Statistics Norway's director general. And it seems that the ministry, and we can see the back of the minister during this event in the parliament here, surrounded by journalists, seems that the ministry had mixed its roles as an owner and a customer because they also pay for some statistics in Statistics Norway. And they were afraid that some reorganization could harm this statistics and analysis. And organizational matters clearly belong to how, at least as I see it, things are done, right or wrong, but it's still how. And that's the responsibility, the sole responsibility of the Director General, according to, was it, Principle 1.4 in the Code of Practice. After that, the minister was heavily criticized by the parliament, but of course the governing majority did not support the conclusion that they had lost confidence in her. Statistical confidentiality may be involved in trade-offs with relevance as well, and cost effectiveness, through data sharing, inside the national statistical system, there is, of course, a risk for disclosure increases if data are shared among many institutions. But confidentiality has also some ethical aspects that goes beyond the microdata and disclosure control and information security. And that has to do with statistics on small groups and vulnerable groups. In Statistics Norway, we have some 10 years old ethical guidelines where it said that we should be careful presenting statistics harming such groups. But attitudes have changed in society and in statistical institutions. 15 years ago, we would not present statistics on costs of immigrants from different countries, more detailed statistics at least. Now we do that to a large extent, even forecasts up to the year 2100. But we certainly do not present statistics like here in the following example. It is a report from the census in Norway, 1930, with the title, which is translated into English to the left, down to the left, people of Sami and Finnish origin, other nationals, blindness, deafness, mental disorder, and insanity. Well, can add that people of Sami origin, today they want more statistics on their minority, but of course they don't want to be put together with the last groups here. A few words about cooperation. It's promoted in the new code of practice and in Vision 2020 and in statistical strategies in the countries, even also in Norway. But as I already mentioned, there is a risk for independence and confidentiality breaches, because if you are in a partnership, for example, on big data, they might want to have some data back. At least we have had such discussions. I think what is important here is equal treatment of all partners and to limit data access to development and production of official statistics.
Two more minutes?
Fine. Conclusions. Compliance with quality frameworks implies finding the right balance between the principles, and ethical considerations should be taken into account as well. And balancing quality criteria, that is statistical professionalism in practice. It's also a consideration of how to safeguard compliance with quality frameworks. Of course, you need a sound legal basis, and then you have the code of practice. But that's not enough, as we have heard several times today. You need means to secure that, or to ensure that the framework is followed. And here we have both internal and external quality reviews, and also the ESS peer reviews is very valuable. I'll just end with an example from Norway. We had a peer review 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Maybe some of the participants in the team are in the audience, I don't know. But they recommended that the statistical law should be revised. And now we are about to have a new statistical law, which is based not only on the European legislation on statistics, new European legislation, but also on code of practice, which is in fact a cornerstone in the new law. And it is said there that the quality criteria in the European code of practice shall govern not only the European statistics, but also all Norwegian official statistics, and maybe even beyond that, should be based on code of practice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, also for keeping the time very well, very exactly. So then we go to our second speaker. This is Michael College from Australia, or maybe not from Australia, because in his CV he has many things. He is trained as an engineer and still thinks of himself as an engineer of statistical processes. He has worked 3 years as a lecturer at the university, then 20 years at Statistics Canada, then 10 years at Statistics Australia, 3 years in the OECD Statistics Division, and now for 13 years as a freelance statistical consultant. And in this role, I think he always is interested to know what happens in quality initiatives, and today he will present some of his ideas in the paper named Experience in Developing Statistical Quality Frameworks. The floor is yours, Michael.
Thank you very much. It's an unusual, actually, to be in such a beautiful room, but to be able to see so very little. Anyway, it's very nice to be here and to be invited to be here. I've been involved in statistical quality frameworks for quite a long time, and one of the things I often wondered is, were there any results from the work that I did, and what happened as a result of various quality initiatives? And on that basis of wanting to find out the answers to that, I contacted some of the organizations with whom I worked. I also contacted organizations that have a good reputation for quality, and I asked them, honestly, you've invested effort in making quality frameworks and in doing quality initiatives. What happened? Tell us not just the good stuff, but what else happened? Are things still working as well as they should? And the idea of this paper is to give you the feedback that I got from the respondents to my little survey. And I thank them very much for it. Those seven agencies answered my questions. First of all, I've got a slide up there which sort of said what the needs for and benefits of a statistical quality framework or a quality assurance framework, I use the words interchangeably, are. And, thank you. And I won't go into that. Just to say that most offices have some form of quality framework, and they undertake initiatives with or without actually formally saying what it is. And as I've said, my question really is, do these initiatives actually work, and what are the lessons learned? So the structure of the presentation, first of all, I'm going to talk about actually establishing a quality assurance framework, support for its implementation, quality reviews, which are often a major feature of a framework, support for other national agencies or authorities producing statistics, the relationship between quality management and other cross-cutting functions, and some general messages. So first of all, introducing and maintaining a quality assurance framework. And I'll start off with an account from Stats Canada. As a result of an audit of the organization, an external audit, Stats Canada put together some documentation indicating how they assured quality. And this was for an internal audit, but they found it so useful, they decided to maintain it and publish it, and they released it in 1999. It was one of the first quality assurance frameworks. There had been plenty of quality guidelines before, but this was probably one of the first efforts. Its objectives were to identify quality management and risk management strategies within the context of Stats Canada's priorities and values, and to reference quality practices that were in place agency-wide and by individual program areas. And this has been maintained ever since, and the most recent update is 2017. And the challenge that Stats Canada made very clear is keeping it relevant. It has to be constantly changed due to new data sources, new technologies, new practices. And this is one of the themes that I'll come back to. As you probably know, there was somewhat based on the quality assurance framework of StatsCan, the United Nations Statistical Commission actually commissioned a national quality assurance framework for which is a template and guidelines for use by NSIs. And subsequently, the UN, the Committee for Chief Statisticians of the UN system, established itself a generic quality assurance framework for UN agencies who hadn't got one or wanted a basis for the revision of one. It was only just being completed, and it's for use by UN agencies that don't have yet a quality assurance framework. So there's no story here about whether it worked or not. It's just arrived. What's the important point here is that people are still developing quality assurance frameworks and feel the need to do that and to provide the tools to do that. Now, one particular agency which will be implementing that framework is the UNCTAD. It has a decentralized statistical system. As a result, there's a need for a standard understanding of quality across the organization. The statistics branch there had already developed such a quality assurance framework, but they awaited implementation for the UN version, which they think will give them more weight implementation, and it will be implemented this year. So, if you've got a quality assurance framework, then you certainly need some form of mechanism for implementing it. An example of this was a data quality network established in 2009, a very comprehensive approach, in fact, to dealing with quality. There were three groups established: a core team, which provided a forum for the data quality unit to present its strategies, a quality circle where subject matter heads got together and discussed quality issues and related their quality principles back to staff, and a quality working group where quality managers from regional offices got together to discuss quality practices in data collection and processing. That sounded like a very good all-round initiative. Only the quality working group is still active. And the reason that was the lesson learned from this was that the people who are most interested in quality initiatives are those who are directly involved in them. They stay interested, but people for whom it's a sort of secondary activity are likely to be less interested, put less effort into it. So the quality working group is still functioning very well, whereas the core team served its purpose after a year or so of communicating the strategies. And again, the quality circle, after a while, it became apparent that the quality initiatives weren't being carried back to the staff of the various subject matter areas. They had to be supplemented with training. Implementation of a code of good practice in Peru. The lessons learned from this particular exercise, development of a code of good practice, was that it was all very well and good to develop a code of good practice, but an organizational unit had to be given overall responsibility for implementing it, because nobody else would unless they were actually obliged to. Commitments had to be translated into measurable indicators, and quality support tools were necessary to develop implementation. So there was a case of a very good idea, which didn't have as much success as hoped for because it didn't have all the degree of follow-up that was necessary. Canada introduced quality training in the middle of, about 4 or 5 years ago. It introduced a course on quality management. It was incredibly successful. There was many enrollments and demands for even more information. The quality unit was almost overwhelmed, apparently, by the volume of requests, so they decided they would make it self-directed learning and put it on the intranet. But their experience has been, although they haven't measured it precisely, their experience has been it just doesn't work as well. Self-directed learning is not as attractive to staff as a course, a face-to-face course. The quality review program at Statistics Canada, in accordance with their quality assurance framework, they started a review in 2008. It was an independent review, a thorough review of their various surveys. And the objectives were to spread the knowledge of quality assurance practices and the risks they can mitigate and identify where resources are necessary to reduce risk to quality. They undertook 5 reviews every year, which doesn't seem very much, but they were fundamental reviews. This was discontinued in 2014. Why? Well, they felt, first of all, that the message about quality had got around the organization, and second, there was sufficient corporate oversight by other means to replace a formal quality review. Support now for other national agencies producing statistics. We've heard quite a lot of that in various sessions today. Statistics Sweden has recently introduced 3 regulations and 3 sets of guidelines, all aimed at helping the various agencies producing statistics to do a better job. Thank you. It's too soon to say how effective this is. It just shows that there is still an ongoing commitment or a substantial commitment from an office with a big reputation for quality towards helping other agencies. Stats Canada recognized the need to help other agencies producing statistics with a special quality toolkit which was aimed at agencies less sophisticated than their own. Finally, as an example of support for other national agencies producing statistics is the Statistical Clearinghouse in Australia, which is objectives to promote good practice and require the clearance of any survey conducted by any other organization in the government of more than 50 businesses. It started in 1997. I know all about it because I actually was responsible for starting it, so I've got quite an emotional attachment to it. And in 2016 and 17, there were about 150 surveys reviewed. 75 took a full review. They saved about 4,000 hours of respondent burden, improved quality, but it ceased operations in 2017. Why? Because the message had got round. Quality was being considered and improved by the other agencies. They didn't think it was justified anymore to continue the program. So, general messages based on this very brief survey of what happens. Firstly, you can expect any quality initiative either to evolve or it'll be discontinued. Secondly, in your initiative, make sure it involves the staff on whom the activities have a direct impact. Third, provide quality tools to support quality initiatives, especially for other national authorities. And finally, coordinate with other cross-cutting frameworks. I didn't have time to mention them, but metadata management is an obvious example. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael, also for keeping well to the time. So we can go to our third speaker, and that is Ana Cristina Martina Bruno. From Brazil. She is also an engineer with an MBA in quality management and a master in production engineering, and she has 25 years of experience as a senior researcher at the Brazilian Institute of Geography and Statistics, which is the statistical office in our terminology. She has also experience in organizational development as an organizational development manager and in the quality committee and governance, risks, and internal control committees. And I think some of the experience she has in that function will present today in the paper called Quality and Risk Management at the Brazilian Statistical Office, a short report of the work in progress. So, floor is yours.
Okay, thank you, Claudia, for introducing me. Good afternoon to you all. My presentation outlines 2 main points. First, I would like to share with you the integrated approach to quality management and risk management that we are taking at the Brazilian Institute of Statistics and Geography. And then I would like to share with you the risk management maturity model that was developed by Brazilian Federal Court of Accounts. They developed that because they are in charge of performing external audits in risk-based external audits in public organizations in Brazil. And we intend to use that as a self-assessment reference for us for evaluating progresses and defining priorities of improvement. And we can also share some lessons learned at the end. So this picture outlines the planning process in our organization and in different levels. So we know that when we establish the strategy, we have done that last year, and we publish our new strategic map. We have set some strategic objectives for the future, and we know that to implement the strategy, these strategic objectives must be translated into actions, and they must be deployed into the other levels of planning. And we need to establish what are the critical processes that will support our strategy in fulfillment our mission. And we also need to define, and we are trying to start to work with strategic strategic projects that are important for us because they will bring to the organization innovation, modernization, and needs for change. And we know that when we are talking about risks, in this whole process, we can identify different types of risks that must be addressed. And at the governance level, we know that we have the strategic risks related to strategic objectives. And in our production processes, we can also identify operational risks and statistical risks, and also in the corporate support activities too. And relating to projects, we have risks related to the portfolio and also related to change. We know that we are introducing big changes, and big changes brings new type of risks that must be addressed. So how are you doing that? And we are in a very starting point of that. But those are the actors involved in this process. At the governance level, strategic risks and corporate risks are responsibility of the board of directors. And in order to help them to do that, we established last year a committee. We call it the Governance, Risks, and Internal Controls Committee. This committee is composed by the deputy directors and the senior managers' advisors, and they are meeting regularly. And for us, this committee has a very important role in this process because they are establishing the risk management policy. We finished that a few months ago. They are deeply discussing the roles and responsibilities in this strategy, and they are very committed. They are also guiding the implementation, how we will do that. And we decided to do an experimental phase that we need to start as a pilot testing in order to consolidate the knowledge and the methodology. And the risk committee, they have also a role in working together with other levels and together with the coordinator and head of units that will work together with project leaders and process owners in order to identify the priorities to start. Okay, talking about quality management system. When we work on quality, we are already working with risks, because risks is related to preventive action. And I'm seeing there Maria and Peter. Yesterday I was there in the training course, and she was talking exactly about these three fundamentals: the process-oriented approach, the PDCA cycle planning, doing, checking, act, and the risks thinking. as fundamentals for the quality management system. And for quality, we also have another committee, the quality committee. They are discussing the quality policy. And quality committee and risks committee, they have common members. And we hope that in the future we can join and have just one committee dealing with risks and quality. And when we are talking about quality management, we say that we need to have a quality improvement and also quality control. And quality control deals with meeting requirements. And when we don't meet the requirement, we need, of course, to correct the nonconformity. But we need to go further and ask, why did the nonconformity happen? And we need to identify the root cause. And that assignable cause must be identified and eliminated. And if you do that, we are avoiding that in the next business case, we have the same nonconformity again for the same cause. This is corrective action. This is quality control. And when we are talking about risk management, we have to think, what can go wrong? What are the potential nonconformities and the potential causes of nonconformities? And this is preventive action. We need to establish controls in two different points of view. We have to try to identify what are our vulnerabilities on different sources of risks. For instance, people, if people are not well trained, or they are in not enough number of systems, if the systems are not integrated, or an activity that is done manually. And those are potential vulnerabilities. And when we have source of risks and vulnerabilities, we have potential causes that must be addressed. So risk management refers to identify potential causes and the probability of occurrence, and establish controls to reduce the probability of those causes to happen. And also we have to think in advance, if the risks materializes, what are the consequences? What are the impacts of that consequences and effects? And we also need to establish controls to reduce and minimize impacts too. And for that, we are working with ISO 3001. We have already started to implement this process. And what we see here is when we have the quality management system, for instance, if you apply the process-driven approach, and we are trying to use GSBPM and GAMSO to align that task in our organization, it is easier to identify risks in all different processes. And it contributes to risk management. And when we have the risk management system implemented, it also contributes to quality because we reinforce preventive actions and new controls. And that's the way we are organizing that. The other issue that I would like to show you is the risk management maturity model developed by the Brazilian Federal Court of Accounts. They have established that based on the international experiences, such as COSO, ISO 3001, and Orange Book from UK too. They have four different dimensions. Environment dimension, what it covers, it deals with culture, it deals with risk governance. We have here leadership, in which extent leaders and senior leaders are committed to risk management system, and if how they are supporting and sustained commitment and overseeing commitment in all different levels. We can see their policies and strategies, how they are defined and put into practice and disseminated in the organization. And also people, if people are informed, aware, trained, and empowered to implement what they have to do. And process dimension. Process dimension is basically the ISO 3001 methodology. It refers to if you have a systematic and formal process for risk management, including identification of risks, analysis, evaluation, treatment plan to respond to risks, and also monitoring, communicating, reporting, and so on. And another dimension here is partnership. We also talked about partnership yesterday too. And related to risk, it also like quality. We need to identify what are the partners and who have common interests and complementary competences that can work together with us and maybe sharing responsibilities related to risks. And the last dimension that's very important too is the results. Here we need to evaluate the effect of what we are doing. We need to assure that this is a process that adds value. This is a process that can create and protect value. We need to measure what are the values. If we are able to improve governance, improve management, improve objective achievement, and we need to measure that. So here, the numbers here are different weights. Of course, we can have the overall maturity index or a maturity in each specific dimension. And we have a scale with five different grades. It's there in the paper. And just some final words to finish. We know that risk management is about increasing maturity over time. We also know that not all of our challenges are just technical. We have to change culture. We have to deal with a transformation in management style to support the necessary change. So we know that we need to emphasize cross actions, interactions, joint decisions, and training in management. Quality management, process management, project management, and now risk management. It must be embedded into managers' tasks. I also included there the internal audits. Yesterday, we have also a question about internal audits add value. We strongly believe that it must add value. It's necessary for improvement, to give feedback and recommendations to improve governance, and monitoring in risks management and quality too. But we are not there yet. We need to start a closer cooperation and start doing audits based on risk in our organization. And to finish, we know that we are in a very starting point of a long journey. Perhaps this journey will never end, but we believe that as we are making progresses, and people are being involved, and we have a strong leadership supporting change, we believe that we can gradually have a new organizational culture and to transform the way we work and the way we produce statistics. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Anna. So far, we are good with the timing. I'm calling then the fourth speaker, which is Sylvia Losko. She is the head of the Strategic Plan Division of ISTAT since 2016, but has 25 years of experience in portfolio and project management, governance, audit, strategic planning, enterprise architecture, so a very broad range of areas, and she will present certainly some experience from that. It's called Strategies and Approaches for Managing Risks in the Official Statistics Production, the ISTAT Experience in the Modernization Program. So the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Claudia. And good afternoon. It's late, so I try to just remain in time. This is the title, this is the topic of my presentation. It's also a part of a big work that we are trying to conduce in this period in the modernization program. Some words as introduction. We are in a period in which a lot of things are changing and innovation processes are inserted as a main focus in all the public organization. This transformation is to guarantee efficiency and competitiveness, and so we have to redesign all our processes in a different way, completely different way. Also to take advantage from resources and with an attention to innovation. Also, digitalization, new technologies offer a lot of scenarios, interesting scenarios, with an impact on process, in particular in the statistical production. These change processes are full of opportunities, but also full of risks that we have to insert in our analysis with a strategic vision, not only with an operative impact, operative view. Risk concept is typically related to impact generated by an event and can be qualified through an appropriate analysis. So this is the sentence in our book, but we have a lot of uncertain conditions that can modify, that can have a negative or positive effect in our activities. In our analysis, we have to consider also this uncertain condition. What about ISTAT? ISTAT is involved in a deep program of change, a modernization program, with the aim of enriching to supply and quality of statistical information and services, uses introducing register and a deep digitalization of our process, standardization of our processes. It is this transformation is based on a business architecture model that identifies four main functional areas: production, support, capacity, and strategy. In this direction, we have to transform our production from traditional survey models. We worked as a silos based on direct acquisition of data from citizens, companies, institutions, towards a different model that uses statistical register. Then in this model, statistical production overcomes a vertical process and go towards a different way to do statistics, but also to use resources, a matrix model. In this sense, in this context, we have introduced a framework as a reference to organize our activity. It is a PPM, a portfolio and project management framework, that has a crucial role in our organization because organize and try to manage activities, improving also a control of the output of our deliverable and also the risks associated with our activity. So we are trying to manage our complexity, also the complexity of our transformation, with a specific focus on risk. Our organization is a project-based organization, so all our activities are seen, organized like a project with an attention to the output, to the statistical deliverable. And we focused and managed the complexity of this transformation under different point of view, and I try to describe this different way to manage risk. We used a hierarchically representation, a risk breakdown structure to manage a risk environment. And first, there is an identification of sources of risk. It is a first level of the first level of our structure, in which we define, we are a detection of and listening the potential source of risk. In the third level, we identify the elements, the single elements that could involve the activity and can have an adverse effect on our activity. This is the third level of our hierarchy. And then we group this risk in three main categories that are enterprise risk, corporate risk, and then operation risk. And we try to manage them at a different level. At enterprise level, this is a sort of analysis that is connected with scenarios, and it is conducted at portfolio level. What is a portfolio for us? It's a collect of initiatives that are independent, but all together help to achieve the goals that are connected with our mission, with our statistical mission. Portfolio is typically on charge with an organization structure, so we are a directorate or department that is responsible for achieving a specific goals with given resources. And risk are associated, so at the corporate, at enterprise level, at the level of portfolio. Nowadays, we have 10 portfolio that are grouped in the four main areas of our model, and so production, and then services, governance, and capacity. And in this picture, I summarize the number of initiatives that are present now in our plan in each portfolio, and also the number of human resources involved in the portfolio, and so on in the activity for each portfolio, and the number of a project manager, the responsible of operative initiatives in Istat. The number of human resources are measured as full-time equivalent, not as a single resources. Another point of view to manage risk in Istat, at corporate level. This is another vision, a transversal vision that put together all the strategic projects that conduce our program of modernization. So this is a way to manage risk with a connection with our strategic programs. We have 7 programs nowadays in Istat that are the line at the principle, the main line of transformation of our institution. And so in every strategic program, we have a cluster of relevant projects, strategic innovative projects, that define to achieve a specific goal of modernization. For example, the first one is a development of integrated system of registers, but the program 7 is a development of skills and responsibility, so that we have 7 lines of innovation that covered a lot of items in Istat. In this picture, I try to summarize the number of a project, the human resources, and then this picture wants to put together the complexity of our program of modernization. In each program, we try to analyze the risk, and this is a way to control the innovation according with the modernization. At operational level, we have organized our activity as initiatives, like a project. So every line of our operational activity in the planning phase are proposed and defined in each portfolio according with this model. Also, risk analysis is conducted. And then there is the identification of the actions that can mitigate the risk. There is the list of operative risk, and then a list of actions that can be conducted to mitigate this risk. Mm-hmm. 3 phases: an initial phase in which we describe the risk, a second phase in which we consider a specific project in a risk form the response, and then finally as a third phase in which we plan the action. This schema is also organized in an IT system, so we manage data, not document. Also in risk management, so we can analyze the risk. And what is our future and some consideration and next step for us? We want to consider also the possibility to introduce a quantitative analysis associated to actual risk analysis that is a qualitative analysis. The challenge is to evaluate every risk that could impact in the project activities, and then introduce a classification for each probability and impact of each project. We can define the result and collocate, indicate in a table the project with a different color, you see, and so the red zone is for us a critical zone. This is a way, also a visual way, that can help us to manage and control the activity that can mitigate our risk. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Silvia, also for keeping to the time. We are very disciplined here. Very German, yes. So now we have our last speakers, and there are two of them. I will introduce both of them so that they can just one go after the other. We start with Nilgün Dosan from, she's the director of Metadata and Standards Department at the Turkish Statistical Office, and works there since 1991 and has also a lot of experience in dissemination, strategy development, classification, standardization, questionnaire design. I will stop here. And of course also quality management. And the second speaker will be Marina Signoro from ISTAT, from Italy, who is now director of research at ISTAT. But we all know her, I think most people know her as the quality manager or the quality person from ISTAT. Now she's also the coordinator of a specific ESS project, the Mixed Mode Design and Social Surveys. But she also has experience from working with the UNECE in quality and metadata. So these are the two speakers, and they will come one after the other. And they will present the paper, Recent Developments in the GSBPM, the Revision and Quality Indicators. So floor is yours.
Thank you, Claudia. The paper co-authored by Statistics Canada, ISTAT, TurkStat, and UNECE. As Claudia mentioned, the presentation has two main sections. I will present the GSBPM revision works, then Marina will continue with the quality indicators. As it is mentioned in too many presentations, GSBPM describes the core business processes undertaken by statistical organizations. It's a widely used model by statistical community for different purposes, for risk management, for quality management, for measuring and defining critical risk, etc. In line with the user needs, it's currently maintained and updated by UNEC Supporting Standards Modernization Group. There are several reasons for the revision of GSBPM. One of them is the user needs. Experiences from users and a number of development in the business landscape showed that there's a need to revise the GSBPM. It was first published in 2008 and revised a few times since then. The current version of the model was released in 2013. The most recent version of GSBPM was endorsed by the CES on the understanding that it should be updated every 5 years. On the other hand, to increase the coherence between standards, especially recent development of GAMSO, requires also some updating of GSBPM. Coming to purpose of the project, the purpose of the revision project is to ensure the model remains relevant and continues serving as a common framework for the modernization of official statistics. The revision work was started in 2017 by UNEC, a working group consisting of 18 members. Has been established under the UNEC Supporting Standards Modernization Group. When we look at the revision process, the first step was to compile feedback to reflect the user needs as much as possible. During this process, 74 issues were reported through the Wiki discussion forum, like providing clarity of the text, including explanations on non-survey data sources to the text, distinguishing some cross-cutting processes, adding more levels below sub-processes, etc. Revision group is reviewing the feedback one by one, analyzing relevant issues and discussing some possible solutions to address these issues. A revised version of GSBPM will be made open for consultation in July 2018. Users will be informed about major changes and ask for feedback on the draft. The group will further make necessary changes in the model. We defined also basic principles for the revision process. One of them is to keep the existing structure unchanged. Since many organizations have already implemented GSBPM, and drastic changes might pose problems to these countries. Also, user feedback showed that GSBPM descriptions are too survey-centric. Therefore, the revision needs to reflect the business processes for admin data, commercial big data, geospatial data, and other data sources. Another point is to make GSBPM more aligned with other standards such as GSIM, GAMSO, and CISPA. The working group is almost finalized the reviewing process of the issues raised by users. Major changes are made only for those that have strong business case and where there is widespread support from users. We try to provide clarity of the text and also consider to keep the simplicity of the model. Examples and descriptions have been updated and expanded to improve the clarification. Also, the boundaries of the sub-processes are being determined more precisely. References to specific sub-processes are included in the explanations. Special attention has been given to keep the GSBPM as a generic model, ensure it to be applied for all data sources. The descriptions of the sub-processes have been expanded to include tasks related to admin, geospatial, or other non-statistical data. Some of the names of the sub-processes are changed to be understood clearly, especially in the build phase. Also, several terminologies and activities have been modified to improve consistency with GSIM and GAMSO. Yes, GSBPM is a generic model and provides a very strong framework for data production. In coordination with the UNEC, during the one-year period, the working group undertook the project and made good effort to finalize the revision process. This is the end of my part. I thank you for your attention. You can check out the paper for more detail. Now I'm giving the floor to Marina.
Thank you. Okay. So now the second part of this presentation concerns the quality indicator that have been developed for the GSBPM, and it's just to announce you that a new version, version 2.0, has been released in October 2017, and this new version enlarge the quality indicators for both statistics derived from both surveys and administrative data sources. Before, version 1.0 was limited to survey-derived statistics. So the new task team composed by Statistics Canada, Italy, New Zealand, Turkey, and Statistics Finland, updated version 1.0 of the quality indicators in order to provide quality indicators also for administrative data sources. And the quality indicators for the GSBPM have been mapped for all phases of the GSBPM and sub-processes, so for each step, but also for quality and metadata management, so for the overarching processes of the GSBPM. What type of indicator are you can find in the document? As Nilgun was mentioning, GSBPM is a generic model, so the indicators are generic to reflect the nature of the model. It's important to underline that we didn't want to reinvent the wheel, therefore we keep consistency with existing framework. Some of them have been also mentioned in the previous presentation by Michael, for instance. So we took as a framework what has been developed at the level of United Nations, but also the quality indicators available at the European statistical system. Generally speaking, the document does not contain formulas for the quality indicators, but refer the quality indicators to the relevant the quality dimension they measure. And you will find mainly quantitative indicators, but sometimes there are also qualitative indicators that take the form of yes or no indicators, and also can be answered in the sense of high, medium, low degree. So to a question of the type, to what extent does this and this? So, and the answer could be to a medium, high, or low degree. Just to provide a few examples on how to use the quality indicators, it's important to say that the quality indicators for the GSBPM provide a standard framework and a common terminology, and this is very important. It's the major aim of all the models that have been developed under the UNECE framework umbrella. But since the quality indicators have been developed for each step of the production process, they support a process-oriented approach to quality management. Two examples on how they can be used in a statistical organization. First, they can support us to rationalize the quality work. So, for instance, by mapping what is already in place, we can discover if the list of indicators used is complete or not, or so if we need to fill in some gaps. But we can also map who is calculating what type of indicator. So maybe we can also avoid duplication of work in different sectors within the same organizations. And okay, it can be also used to define a mid-term quality policy within an organization. Since the quality indicators are generic, they can be tailored according to the needs of the organizations. So one organization can decide to set their own quality targets they want to achieve in a given time period, and in this way they can be... they can support a midterm quality policy. And also to develop such a policy, it is possible to take some good ideas from the quality indicators that have been defined for the overarching processes. So I'm concluding with the next steps ahead, the modernization, the supporting standard committee. First of all, since we will collect, as Nilgun will say, we will open the consultation on the revision of the GSBPM. It will be finalized at the end of this year. And then a major task will be to communicate and promote the revised version of the GSBPM. By the way, the UNEC is also revising GSIM, so they will be both released at the end of this year. So this will be an important task. Another important task is to provide further clarity on how the modernization model and frameworks fit together. So the links between GSIM, GSBPM, CISPA, and GAMSO are not always so clear, and the UNEC would like to work in this direction. And there are two activities that we would like to start next year. First one is to map the input and outputs of each GSBPM subprocess by using GSIM objects. And the second one is to further develop with the, let me say, to provide more detailed explanation on the overarching processes that are in GSBPM and in GAMSO in order to avoid misunderstanding and overlapping between the two models. And obviously, as we were saying at the beginning, this model, in particularly GSBPM, is widely used, but we need to be aware of the developments and work in such a way that we keep these models relevant for the statistical community. So I thank you all for listening at this late time in the evening. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much also to the last two presenters. I think we fit rather well with the time, so we still have 20 minutes also for questions, even if it is quite late. And if ever possible, it would be nice to switch on the light in the room, because we don't see anybody from this place. Yes, that looks better. So the floor is yours for questions.
Thank you very much, Thomas Burg, Statistics Austria. First of all, I would like to thank all the presenters for their interesting and very comprehensive presentations. I have a question to the last presenters of GSBPM, and this regards the aspects of the link to certain metadata standards. You mentioned GSIM as possible in the last slide. Marina, you mentioned that one of the next steps will to describe GSBPM outputs on the basis of GSIM objects. In the clickable in the description of GSIM, you find some basic work about the relation of GSIM to some common metadata standard as DDI and SDMX. And I think it's very interesting for metadata management in statistical office to have some kind of basic metadata standard for the GSIM objects. Are there plans to develop some things or to further develop this mapping tendencies? They are available still, or are there any plans to metadata standards as well concerning GSBPM and GSIM? This would be interesting for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think we collect a few more. There's somebody very up, and then we take the next questions down here.
So thank you very much for all presentations. They were extremely interesting, and especially I would like to thank to Anna Kristina. I have to say I was very pleased to listen to your presentation, because we are absolutely on the same way. Thank you very much. And I have a very, very simple question to you. And this is, you mentioned in a very excellent and systematic way, the approach to risk management or managing risk. And my question is really very simple. Whether you have some kind of risk owner, so to whom did you assign the famous role of risk owner? And whether you have some kind of administrative support, just to, because there are a lot of risks of different, on different levels, I would say. So whether you have also something like administrative support to whole, issue concerning risk management. Thank you very much.
There was somebody very much up in the...
Hey, hi. I'm Milos from Switzerland. Just a few questions about GSBPM and Gamso. The first one is, will there be some quality indicators also for the Gamso model in the future? Was this discussed already? You mentioned that the GSBPM now also integrates statistics based on administrative data. I'm not sure, does it also integrate statistics such as derived statistics, like national accounts or other type of statistics? And about the consolidation phase where you will be sending the new proposal of the GSBPM, when will be this sent and how, through which canal? Is it per email or... Thank you very much.
Okay, maybe I add one question also to the gentleman on the table. For Michael, you put some lessons or some messages at the end, and you talked a lot about quality initiatives may evolve or discontinue. But what would, in your view, be the success factors to get quality reviews, quality audits done, accepted, implemented, and not being discontinued in the office? And for Hans Vigo, I think I found this, your presentation is very provoking, I would say, this that the principles are, or that certain practices really impact on our principles. And I was wondering, you mentioned this professional independence versus relevance with the commissioned work and data-based management also for other agencies, whether these are real cases or they are just examples that are maybe linked to an incomplete or not proper legal basis, or whether you think this is really something that can affect many offices. But let's start with the GSBPM questions that came in the beginning.
I can start and Marina will continue if you wish. Regarding to the DDI and SDMX standards, there are too many standards with regarding to the data, structural and reference metadata standards are different. You can use SDMX, DDI, or any other ESMS, ESQRS for reference metadata and structural metadata. But GSBPM is a process model and defines the production process. You are specifying needs, beginning from specifying needs to the dissemination. For example, in the design phase, you are designing your data structures and some variables, etc. And in the collect phase, you are producing metadata on the collection phase. For example, some tabulation plans, for example, for confidentiality issues, etc., for questionnaires, and you are all driving metadata on that. Input and outputs are so difficult, especially driving mapping inputs and outputs of the processes. For example, in the design specify needs phase, you are drafting a law, for example, with the to be signed with the collaborative institutions. It is going like that. Draft law in first stage, then the final law in the last stage. So inputs and outputs is derived like that. For example, draft variables, draft tabulation plans, and then configured tabulation plans and variables. In the process approach, yes, inputs, outputs are will be tried to be mapped in the selective sub-processes, but structural and metadata, of course, will be taken into account. This is, I don't know whether answered your question. If you would like to add.
Yes, and you will see the GSIM revision with an annex on variables that maybe could help you also. And we will see if at the end of next year we can satisfy your needs. And regarding the question from the colleague from Switzerland, yes, I am aware that was a workshop 2 years ago in Geneva in which the question of developing quality indicators for GAMSO was raised, and I don't know, maybe this is another issue to take into account. I would like to stress that the work in the Modernization Committee of the UNECE is on a voluntary basis, and that you are all welcome to join us and to contribute. What we can do each year depends a lot of the availability of experts that are willing to participate. So if you're willing to give a positive contribution, you can just send an email. For what concerns the consultation process, usually UNECE sends emails either to the International Affairs or to the Director General directly for the consultation phase. Also, the list of experts, of thematic experts, are in copy to these messages. So there might be the chance that you are also informed about the consultation. The documents will be sent in July, so in a few days for consultation. And I think this is answer the questions.
Okay, thank you, Maria, for your remark. I'm very glad with that. I'm not quite sure if I understood completely your question, but I think that you are referring to that slide that shows our structure and some different actors. And I remember yesterday we were talking about process owners, and in your organization they are the general directors and top management. But in our case here, we are located at Rio de Janeiro, and there are located the board of directors and deputy directors, and the committees are working there. And when I mentioned the head of units, I mean the head of units in different cities of Brazil that are responsible for a set of agencies. And also the coordinator in our structure, they are responsible for a lot of processes and work with a lot of managers. And for us, when we mentioned that they work together with project leaders and process owners, are medium and intermediate managers. But when they have to discuss improvement in the project, the coordinator together with the directors and the committee, they can make a negotiation together. So I'm not sure if that was the question, but it's a summary of that structure.
Yes, I'd like to just answer Claudia's question. Quality reviews of statistical processes are like a cornerstone of the quality assurance framework, or typically are. And it happened that when I was reporting on the feedback from some of the quality initiatives I mentioned, some instances where very significant agencies have actually stopped formally stopped their peer reviews of peer quality reviews, that is to say quality review conducted by other people within the statistical office. I wouldn't like you to think that I would be advocating this as a policy. It was simply reporting the practices that were reported to me. It seems fairly obvious that the first time a quality review is conducted of a statistical process, there are major changes, that major improvements that are then made. Each successive time a review is conducted, there's probably less to find, and the staff are learn less. So there is likely a case for saying, if you've never conducted quality reviews, then it's a good it would be a good thing to start. If you are conducting quality reviews, then it's probably a good thing of a good thing to think of a way of making them as simple as possible, possibly just turning them into a self-assessment. And that's in fact what's happened at Statistics Canada and other organizations. So there's a place for quality reviews. And when it comes to Eurostat, for example, who want assurance that the data they receive from the various countries are up to standard, it seems to me they have no alternative but to ask for evidence and expect evidence. However, the vehicle by which they obtain the evidence is what can probably be gradually refined over time. Thank you.
Yeah, I understood your question. It was about is there anything that could be improved in law or quality frameworks to overcome some of the problems I described? Was that?
My question is basically, the examples you described, are they not due to maybe an imperfect legal basis or other frameworks, rather than symptomatic that the principles contradict each other or have a...
I would say that... No, I don't think in general. I think the principles and the laws are as clear as they could be, because I don't think you get rid of the trade-offs, for example, by describing things more detailed in the laws. But having said that, I would also say that on a national level in Norway, the new law should help, because that has led to a lot of attention around these questions. So more communication and consciousness about what's really in there, I think, is very important. And then, of course, there are rainy days, as I said, and then you really see what you meet some problems you never thought of, because... because of some unlucky circumstances. If you read my paper, you will see that there were questions in statistics and analysis linked to immigration. And immigration is, of course, a hot theme all over Europe and beyond. And I think that... what statistics can do there is to be more clever on presenting statistics. We should not deny presenting statistics, but we should present it in a context. Not only one thing like costs, for example, then we should also try to describe more. And fake news are often news taken out of a proper context. Thank you.
Okay, are there other questions, or everybody is tired? It's very late. This, I don't see. Okay, in the very first row, yes, as I said, we hardly see you.
Thank you very much. I have one question to Hans Vigo. I like your presentation very much because you really, as Claudia said, open some very interesting areas, especially with these trade-offs. And my question relates to partnership, and you mentioned the trade-off, for example, with confidentiality or something like this, which is, for me, it is almost linked to risk management. And my question is, imagine a partnership, and the negotiation power is usually on their side, on the side of partners, big data owners, etc. We want something, and they want something from us, we cannot give it. do you have some kind of experience how to handle such situations? Maybe it belongs more to diplomacy. Maybe this is a next competence of statisticians. But anyway, how to handle the situation to avoid risk, or at least to eliminate this risk of this situation when the negotiation power is on the side of our partner? Thank you.
I saw there was a question right in the first or second row. So maybe you can pass the micro.
Rimantas Vicinavičius, Statistics Consultant on Quality. And my question relates to the last presentation on GSBPM standard. It relates to one previous question. With GSBPM, we saw several developments in different national applications. Today, we have seen with Portugal that the sub-process level is not enough, then it's divided into 150 tasks. There are other countries who have 109. And here, in applying GSBPM, people call differently. Well, GSBPM is already, with the first version, made an excellent work when all terminology has been harmonized. But even with the first version, if we visit UN site, this attempt by Norway, where they introduced additional level, there's some Excel sheet, and this is ongoing effort. But at this point, there's already not a single, but many countries doing that are going on their own. They are using their own terminology. Some countries call it one way, some other way. And it seems that these needs are emerging. And my view here is that what we need more detailed standards or more standards that are less detailed. And I have a very clear attitude that we need less standards which are consistent but more detailed. And here, some recalling previous question, GSBPM version 5 is very explicit about metadata because it recommends as an overarching dimension that GSBPM could be applied and mentions as suitable for that purpose. So never mind that we might have many standards for metadata, but still GSBPM is very explicit on that. And I understood the question that it, as long as it has an ambition, so we need really a consistency here and some sort of guidelines, especially in the sixth version. So making this context short, don't you think that the time will arrive at some point when we will need another level to harmonize efforts of many statistical institutes in making GSBPM the most useful at the appropriate level of details? And a second is relates to metadata and overarching processes, that it should be very much consistent with all the other efforts in other overarching processes. So what are your views? Could we expect something to see of it in public debates starting next month, or we should wait for the version number 7?
I start with the other thing and then I think more about this GSBPM. Well, partnership, I think we just seen the start of some possible challenges here. There are two types of partnerships I have in mind. One is which is reflected in the new Code of Practice 1bis on officials or European statistics in that case, that we now have to take the UNAS, the other national authorities, more seriously. Not only seriously, we have the responsibility for the quality of their statistics. And at the same time, we should share data among the UNAS inside the whole statistical system of official statistics. That is at least a proposal in the new law on statistics, Norwegian statistical law. And it's already started a lot of discussion on that, because you also mentioned this, what's called G, I mean, the, yeah, this new European law on
data protection.
Yeah. You get all kind of these discussions. But the other is a partnership with in connection with developing new statistics, partnerships with, for example, banks, with mobile telephone companies, and with shops or chains or shops. We have examples on that, and in the experimental phase, it's okay, no problem. But we have to be very careful that we have to treat everyone equally. And again, the new law will give us access to privately held data. And that's very good, also for the experimenting and development. But I think there are some problems we haven't really gone into, because we haven't had too much of this kind of partnerships yet. Say something about GSPP.
Okay. I can start and if I will give. Okay. Yeah, thank you for your question. There were issues related to your point, creating sub processes under the second level. But in the working group, we thought that it would be difficult to create a third level sub processes, and it is very, very, it could be misunderstood by the users. So we decided to put more explanations under the second level sub processes. We made more detailed explanations under the sub-processes. If we create third level, it might be more than, would not be generic. Since many countries, as you mentioned, creating third level. In Turkstat, we also created third level, but it is depending on your usage. For what purposes you will use, you can create your own levels. It is generic. It puts some framework on your table, and you can use in many ways. If you use third level, and if you would like to create or input outputs in the third level, it's that I am not imagining it. You can create your own. We put this decision to the respective countries.
I don't have to add anything, it's true. There has been a debate in the revision task team about this point, and the majority decided not to go for a more detailed standards. And for instance, in ISTAT, we did the same. We added one level for a specific purpose that was to map the task of the new directorate for data collection, so we needed another level to really map who was doing what. But as Nilgun was saying, this was for our specific needs in that specific moment. I think the GSBPM generic is still a common language and a common framework, and that we can understand each other and use GSBPM also if there is not this more detailed level. But maybe in the future we can work on this.
Just a comment. You referred to the three-level documentation you've seen in Statistics Norway. that's a bit old documentation, and I agree with what's been said here. I don't think it's sustainable to say that you should document on the three levels, but it's possible because it's a generic model. And then I would support, you said that the risk management is very relevant in connection with partnership. Thank you.
Okay, I think now we are really at the end of the session. So thank you very much to the speakers for very interesting, sometimes also thought-provoking presentations. Thank you to the audience for coming, for listening, and also for asking interesting questions. If I remember well from our card, the cocktail starts at 7:45, somewhere around in this building, and otherwise we will see each other tomorrow.